Hello and welcome to the second Robin Pod Weekly of 2024, which is, of course, powered by Budget Tyres Auto Centre, the only car specialist trusted by players, club officials and supporters of Hull Kingston Rovers. For this edition of the Red Robin Pod Weekly, I'm delighted to be joined by the second favourite man in East Hull, Graham Turner, of course, a podcast regular returning for the new season. Graham, seems to have been a bit of a long pre-season, but it's definitely whetted the appetite with the Sheffield Eagles up next at Craven Park on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the long winter months are hard yards for fans to go through, and when all the news dries up after the initial flurry of signings, and that it can be quite a long while to endure. But yeah, now we're sort of starting to see fixtures coming up, albeit friendlies, all gearing up towards the beginning of the season. It just gets your juices flowing as a fan again and looking forward to getting back and supporting the boys.
Yeah, and 2023 was such a big season, wasn't it, for the Robins? Of course, Willie Peters' first season as head coach. And it was almost like we needed a bit of a long pre-season just to process, comprehend what had happened and where we are as a club and where the team is, especially going into 2024, especially with the raft of new signings and the number of departees, the retirement of Sean Kennedy-Dowell and Kane Lynette, for example. There was a lot going on in that space of September where I think we almost needed a bit of a break and just to take stock of what had happened.
Yeah, I think we've commented many times, Jono, on the during the season, last season, around it just being a typical week for Hull KR where there's tons of stuff going on all the time. And just to have that time to chill out, to decompress, take a break away from the game, from a playing and staff perspective, I'm sure is much welcomed, as well as the physical demands it puts on your body as a professional rugby player. But yeah, I'm sure they welcome that. But yeah, looking forward to getting back into that grind of weekly rugby again. It'll be really good, and supporting the boys as much as we can, and yeah, hoping for, dare I say, equally as successful, and if not more successful season than last season, if that's possible.
Yeah, the players have just returned from Tenerife. You only have to look out the window now, Graham, to see the benefits of a warm weather camp. Obviously, it guarantees the ability to train on grass, which is something they've not been able to do so far this season, this pre-season, with them utilising 3G services. So they get to train on grass. More importantly, it gets them to bond as a team, doesn't it? And when you look at the number of changes within the squad personnel, that togetherness, that community that's created in camps such as the Tenerife one is so important. And all the snippets, all the sound bites we've heard from players and Willie Peters, he's just how important that camp has been. And we saw the benefit of that last season as well.
Absolutely. I think both players and coaching staff, quite a lot of time in interviews, referred back to how hard everybody worked over in that training camp last year, and if the efforts are being reproduced this year and replicated again, then look, it stood them in a really good stead for a great start to last season. Let's hope that the same happens again, albeit with different personnel, some outs, some ins. So like you say there, that gellingness, that togetherness, those connections, those are all what those camps are about for squads, and finding out where players are at fitness-wise when they come back after potentially a long off-season as well, and getting people up to full speed. The benefit, as you mentioned there, Jono, of being able to train properly and train hard in good conditions from a mental perspective puts you in fantastic shape, rather than having to do it all in the wind, the rain, the ice, the cold, etc. Must just put you in a better shape mentally to go ahead, to go about your business. So yeah, let's hope they come back. A bit of a bump this week with changing temperatures for them and weather. But yeah, let's hope that's been a successful camp as it was last year. Let's hope it bodes well for a good start to the season again.
Yeah, it's funny as well, because I remember last season, I think even when we had Paul Cook on the Robin Pod, who's now the assistant coach at the at York, so we wish him well. I'm guessing his time might be a bit limited, so you might not hear him as much on the podcast in 2024, but we'll wish him all the best. He pointed to the fact that the training camp might have had a detrimental effect on the Robins. We saw that middle part of the season, didn't we, where we encountered a number of injuries, the players looked a little bit fatigued, and there's question marks of whether the training was almost too hard, because if you listen to the players at the moment, it's almost becoming a Willie Peters hallmark, isn't it? Tough training, tough pre-season. But you saw at the back end of the season just how important it was to get that right in pre-season. And it's not something we've become accustomed to, is it, with the Robins over the past few years? Pre-season often just not worked out for the Robins. And you know, train hard, play hard, build them bonds, you know, hopefully, like we did last season, especially at the back end when we could have quite easily fallen off the wagon after the Challenge Cup final defeat. This really is so important.
Absolutely. I think I'm of the opinion that the pre-season should be hard, because that's where you do the most of your training. If you're looking at what happens in a, you know, rugby league squad, they don't go full bore during the week when they've got games at the weekend. This is the time to go really hard on the weights and fatigue the body and get the muscles up to strength and, you know, get that resilience in the body. During the week on a game-to-game season, that's about ticking over and maintaining rather than actually training to, you know, to improve strength and fitness. So I'm a big believer that these 6-8 weeks of pre-season, whatever it's been, are really, really important to strengthen the bodies, to get the mind prepared for what's about to come. Because when you've seen players come back in to the fold halfway through a season, for example, they've just looked way off in terms of that fitness and that resilience, and they need 6, 7, 8 weeks to get up to that speed. So during the season itself, as I say, I think that's more about just topping up and maintaining the levels. Look, you're always going to get injuries in rugby league. It's a contact sport, as we know, and they're just part and parcel of the game. And all you can do is try and mitigate and minimise the ones that you cop for. But each team will go through patches where they're showing some good strength and good form, and others will drop off during the season. So no team will be sparkling 100% every week of the season. It's too long a season for that. But the best teams are always there at the top of the league. They're there for a reason, because they're good teams that do things right. And I think when you look at what other clubs have done and what other teams have done, they work hard in pre-season. Nobody coasts through a pre-season and expects to ramp it up in game time. It's always working hard in pre-season and then maintaining that as long as you can, and then having a natural lull in the middle somewhere, and then building up again towards the business end of the season.
Yeah, great to see Matt Brady tuning in on the live stream over on YouTube. He's got a couple of questions. We'll come to them later on, Mark, in the Robin pod. We mentioned it's important, Graham, for the players to gel and get that togetherness in pre-season. There's been a couple additions to the coaching personnel as well. Obviously, we saw Danny Maguire depart to go to Castleford. He was replaced by Danny Ward. We've also got a new football manager in Brian Stowe. He's come on board. The time that they'll get to spend with the players, especially in a camp like what they've just experienced in Tenerife, will be so important. And you know, it is. There's a lot of continuity from last season, but this is almost a new setup as well, if that makes sense. There's going to be a lot of new things come in 2024. So it's going to be interesting to see how Danny Ward works, Willie Peters, the dynamic he brings, because he's vastly experienced in rugby league, of course, a former Robin. He turned down the Cass head coach role to come to Rovers as assistant. So it shows you how much he wanted to be part of what Willie Peters is doing. And yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how he comes into the club.
Or he didn't want to be part of what Cass have got going on. So read that into that, whichever way you want. But yeah, very experienced personnel coming in Danny Ward. So you would only think that would add value to what Willie Peters is doing, and a respected coach within the rugby league professional world as well. So I think from a player's perspective, that they should buy into that straight away, rather than somebody who's coming over from somewhere that they've not really had any dealings with or heard of before. They've got to find that time to earn the trust and respect of the players. But I don't think Danny Ward needs that, given his pedigree as player and coach of the past. So again, it's vital for not necessarily the coaches to start impressing their opinions on the players, but also the players to understand how the coaches work and how both can get the best out of each other. And like you said before, that time together away from all distractions and just focusing for a week, 10 days on goals for the season, bonds, etc., I think is invaluable. And so hopefully, people will always come and go within squads and within coaching setups. But hopefully what we've got this season, once we get going and everything gels, you'd like to think could be a stronger setup than we had last season, which again bodes well for progress on the field.
Yeah, it's something I touched on in Robin Pod 1 with Joe Appleyard. There seems to be a higher level of professionalism within the club, which is now manifesting itself with the squad. Seems to be more resources put into the off-field stuff, I think. And it's not a criticism necessarily of what's gone on previously, because the people could only do what they could do with the resources that were available, whether that be finance. There seems to be greater investment into off-field things, which support what the players then do on the pitch. And for me, there seems to be direct correlation now with, you know, the appointment of someone like Brian Stowe to the direct correlation between what the new power board, if you want to call it that, of being able to do, and now what we're seeing in terms of the investment going into off-field stuff. And that is only going to help the players ultimately out on the pitch, isn't it? By the more resources that are pumped into that team and around that team, hopefully it's going to bear its fruits in terms of what happens then on the pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think standards is a big word. In fact, of setting your standards high, and not saying we haven't before, but we seem to have raised the bar of where our standards should be, which has been noticeable both on and off the field. And rather than just sort of coasting through, there's now an expectation and an anticipation that we can compete at that top table. And we've got the background and staff and board set up well and moving forward in the right direction. The squad under Willie Peters has come together last season and hopefully would develop further this season as well. So it's all pointing in the right direction. And I think without that raising of standards and expectations, you can't hold each other to account if you fall short of that. And I think that's a good thing to be able to do peer-to-peer, is hold each other to account on those standards. And the changing room is a place where those conversations can go on and players can know what to expect. And I think with some of the senior pros that we've had in last season, unfortunately we've lost SKD, Kane Lynette, etc., but the likes of your Ryan Halls, etc., ultimate professionals. So working with and learning from those type of player who have been there, done it, worn umpteen T-shirts, got umpteen medals and rings, you can't fail to set your standards high because they operate at the highest standards anyway. So that dragging up of our standard from wherever it was to where it's going to now, I feel has been a huge positive. And anybody coming into the setup has to abide by those standards. Otherwise, we've seen what can happen with the Willie Peters last season and through the course of the pre-season, of how ruthless he's been in players that aren't up to scratch and meeting those standards or attitudes that he expects. And some of the standards that we're talking about aren't necessarily ones that you need something for. So your attitude to go above and beyond for your fellow player and your team, that attitude is within. It's not something that extra money will bring or an extra bit of this will bring. That's got to be from an inner drive, and that can only be self-taught and self-learned, and being in and around players like that can only bring other players' levels up as well. So all operating at those high standards, again, and having that accountability to each other and the club more so, will hopefully drive everything up on and off the pitch.
Yeah, and it is an evolving process. And I think you have to go back further than, obviously, Willie Peters' appointment. I think you have to go back to the Tony Smith era in terms of the raising expectations amongst supporters. Some of the signings that he made, and there seemed to be, the club seemed to grow with Tony Smith. Now, obviously, that didn't pan out, how we wanted it to at the time, but, here today, gone tomorrow, and look where we are now. But I think it's each season we seem to have evolved, and we seem to have got better. We seem to have brought more experienced players in. You only have to look, yes, we've lost, the likes of Sean Kenny Dowell, although he's still around the club in a coaching capacity, Kane Lynette. But then you look through who's come in: Hiku, Evels, Opacic, Gildart, players of that ilk, joining Ryan Hall, Batchelor, these are players who've got high expectations and high standards themselves. What I would say is, though, Graham, and does that then, that raising expectations, that barometer going a little bit higher, does that increase the pressure on Willie Peters to deliver, especially on the back of a very, well, relatively successful 2023 in terms of what we achieved? It obviously didn't lead to silverware, but it was our best ever Super League campaign. Does that then raise the expectations on Willie Peters? And do you think he's a coach who might thrive on that and actually expect it and welcome it?
I think he will. And I think he's the one to set those standards and live and die by those standards. So I think he will acknowledge if standards have fallen short. And he's done that previously with players and spoken to players about, you know, the performance. I mean, Minchella springs to mind last season when I had a word with him beginning of the season, arm around the shoulder. And you know, we all saw how good Mini was the second half of the season for us. So I think he's not afraid to highlight where standards aren't being met. And I guess if you're going to hold others to account for that, you've got to be held accountable for that as well. So you've got to set the benchmarks for everything we do as a head coach. And I think from what I saw of him last season, there wasn't one occasion where I thought he sort of swayed away from that or steered away from the narrative that he was promoting there. And I think that attitude from him and those high levels that he expects of himself and his staff and his players just should transmit through the whole squad as a belief and almost a mantra that they operate by about these are our standards. And, you know, the boys have talked historically about effort areas and working hard for each other. Those are things that you have to consciously do. You have to make a decision to do that. You can choose not to do it or to do it. And more often than not, those effort areas, certainly in defence, was choosing to do it. So that tells me that they're on the same page as Willie Peters. And I think, yeah, it brings pressure. Every professional job where you've got results that matter every weekend, there's always pressure. You know, you look at the football game and see which managers are under pressure and they're, you know, top half of the table, for example, and going pretty well. So I think you'll never get away from the pressure of results in a professional sport. How you handle it and how you deal with it and how you portray the messaging around that is, you know, is part of the skill and art of being a head coach or a manager in itself. So, yeah, I don't think anybody goes into head coaching or managerial roles knowing that they could be, you know, three or four games away from bad results and ultimately, you know, people asking questions. So don't think Peters has got that to worry about at this stage. But yes, I think the expectation goes up, but I think that's also an expectation that he and the players have put on themselves as well.
Yeah, but it's far more refreshing to be talking about the pressure on a coach to deliver success rather than the pressure on a coach to keep a team in the league or compete even. So it is a welcome change. A few bits and bobs, Graham. Jordan Abdul, we spoke about him departing the Robins on a season-long loan deal to the Catalan Dragons on the previous podcast. Since then, there's been a few more interviews come out, a few more snippets of information. Obviously, the deal's heavily weighted in Catalan's favour in terms of whether they sign him or not. They almost have they've got first refusal on whether they want to keep him or not. Yeah. Interestingly, some of the interviews Jordan Abdul's done since he signed for Catalan was saying about how it wasn't necessarily Hull, Kingston Rovers where he had the problem. It was the city of Hull, the goldfish bowl, the routine that he'd got himself into, and him almost needing to go to the south of France to get away from everything that was around him during his time in Hull. One of the comments he made was about the conversation he had with Willie Peters, and he said it wasn't as a coach, it was more as a friend, which says to me that the relationship between Willie Peters and Jordan Abdul was strong and Willie Peters wasn't the reason why Jordan Abdul departed. You would allude to the fact that Willie Peters was probably the person responsible for Jordan Abdul getting the contract extension last season in the first place. It does look like, though, that if Jordan Abdul does well in Catalan, down in Perpignan, there's probably not a route back for him to Hull, Kingston Rovers, is there? Because he'll point towards everything that's gone right for him as a result of moving to the south of France. Why would he then want to up sticks, leave that behind him, to come back to somewhere where he's identified as being a problem?
Yeah, which is strange for a Hull lad to sort of say that Hull is a problem in itself. So there may be other things going on behind the scenes which we are not party to. So it's, you know, there's no point in offering any explanation for that. But yeah, sometimes you've sort of seen players leaving one club and joining another one way off, and then all of a sudden they become a different person. But it wasn't too long ago in the past two seasons where Jordan's started off the season really well. And, you know, we all know about his Man of Steel points in the first sort of 10, 12 games of the season, right up there. All of a sudden got injured, as you know, serious injury that kept him out for multiple weeks, and the season just tailed off for him. So I think there's not been, I won't say it's not been lucky with his injuries, but some of the injuries you can do things for yourself to help minimise or prevent them. Some of it might be attitude thing about fighting for a place. And look, I think if it, as it plays out, if it's weighted so heavily in Catalan's favour and it's weighted so that the player can still go away, earn a living and play his rugby and get back on track again, that seems like a player-centred approach that Peters has took about caring for the player. And yeah, it was probably Peters' direction that brought about Jordan's recent contract. So again, looking after the player, the best thing for him to do at this point in time in his career might be to get away from it all. If the city of Hull is a problem for Jordan, then the goldfish bowl, let's remove him out of that and put him somewhere else, find him somewhere else to go. And if, you know, if he does have a good season, then, well, there's a decision to be made by Catalans along that first refusal line. But who knows? You know, players sometimes come back, sometimes don't. It just depends. He could have a wow of a season. He could get injured again. We just don't know at the minute. So, yeah, first and foremost, he's been very good for Rovers when he's been on the field. But if his head's not in it for Rovers at the minute and it's causing him a problem, then he's going to be thinking more about that than performances on the pitch for us. So the best thing might be to allow him to be offloaded, albeit it seems as a fan very unfavourably towards us as a club that we're almost giving a prize asset away.
Yeah, and I dare say some of the disdain from Robin supporters comes from the fact that we just genuinely wanted him to do the best he can absolutely in the red and white of all Kingston Rovers. So it's not necessarily,
absolutely,
I don't think personally, you know, a personal attack or anything on John and Abdul. It's that we just genuinely wanted to see him do well for us. And we saw that early season form last season, didn't we? And we saw him up there with some of the biggest names in Super League and the Man of Steel points. And we saw his impact on the side. But hey-ho, he's gone. He's not our player. We move on. I dare say it's going to be interesting to see what reception he gets at Craven Park. Should he be pulling up trees at Catalan? C'est la vie, we'll see, won't we? Up next on Sunday, Graeme, the first game of 2024 for Hull Kingston Rovers. It's a pre-season friendly against Mark Aston's Sheffield Eagles. Side will finish fourth in the Championship last season. Missed out on third spot on the final day of the season, Bradford Bulls defeating them, so that they missed out on third spot. Finished the season with 16 wins from 27 matches. A team who probably did a little bit better than most people thought in the Championship. And it is going to be a stern test for the Robins, regardless of what kind of side they put out. Of course, at this stage, Graeme, we don't know what the squad news is, but reading and listening to Reece Butterworth's comments he's been put in front of the press this week, we can surmise probably the level of squad that we're going to put out. But like I say, regardless of the level of squad, it's going to be a stern test for any Hull Kingston Rovers side.
Yeah, whenever you come up against Championship sides or lower league sides, they've always got something to prove, haven't they? Because many of the players will believe they're aiming and aspiring to be Super League players, so they want to put themselves in the shop windows. And yeah, they'll want a good run out, you know, if they've got aspirations for themselves of challenging in the Championship this year for a higher than fourth position, and obviously pushing on toward that potential top spot, then they're going to want to start well and test themselves. And what better game for them than against a Super League opposition that's done well last season? I think it'll be a tough test. It should be an honest contest. Again, you can never tell with friendlies and the squads that people put out as a benchmark for how the season's going to go. But you'd like to think that a lot of players would get some decent minutes under the belt, try a few combinations out, people in positions where we're looking to cement spots for the season, and then ultimately come away with no injuries.
Yeah, if you look at the Sheffield Eagles squad, obviously they don't have the luxury necessarily of making too many adaptations to their first team squad. Apologies. There's a trio of former Robins, Carson Matty Marsh, Chris Wellham, and Mitch Clark, who's recently just signed for the Eagles. So they'll all be familiar to all Kingston Rovers supporters. You've got Anthony Thackeray, done the rounds in a lot of Championship Rugby League. He's from Hull as well. And then you look at through some of the other recognisable names, Ben Jones-Bishop. Of course, we saw what he did with the Leeds Rhinos and down at Wakefield. Matty Dawson-Jones, St Helens, Lee Bradford. Corey Aston, who was the Championship's top point scorer last season, son of head coach Mark. Eddie Batty, we saw what he could do with Wakefield last season and the London Broncos. Jesse Sene-Lefau, we saw, you know, he's got good form with Castleford and Featherstone. One player who won't be featuring is Quinton Luai Tuai, of course, father of Phoenix, who probably will be playing on Sunday for Hull Kingston Rovers. So we wish him all the best. I think he suffered a heart attack not too long ago whilst training. So playing up to, what is he, the ripe old age of 40, I think, or 39 at the moment. So still playing, so we wish him all the best. Like we said, it is going to be a tough encounter. Probably not expecting too many senior pros to feature on Sunday, Graham.
No, I think it's one of them where you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. You've got to give people game time to get used to match speed and all that, and get those combinations in real time in match play as well. So, but you've got to balance that up with risks of doing so at such an early stage in the season. So I think there might be the one or two come forward and they might get 15, 20 minutes and then they'll be quickly hooked to make way. But it's a good opportunity for people to get minutes under the belt, especially if they've had a tough pre-season and or if they're coming back off slight surgery injuries, and you know, just to get the body used to, again, the physicality of the game, time in the legs, time in the lungs, etc. And, you know, the competitiveness that comes with play. It doesn't matter who you're playing against. As soon as the whistle goes and you step over that white line, players will want to perform. So yeah, let's hope it's a good occasion, no injuries, and, you know, good to see some live rugby again.
Yeah, at this stage, we're not sure whether there's any injuries within the camp. Obviously, we'll know more. And if you're listening to this, or watching this on YouTube, by the time you do watch or listen to this, the squad news might be out and we'll have a more better indication of who's featured and who's fit. I mean, you imagine if you go through the squad list, UC Fiding, Corey Hall, PLT, Louis Senior, Reece Butterworth's already been confirmed as starting at number 9, Harvey Moore, AJ Wallace, Zach Fishwick, Louis Gorman, Leo Tennyson, Lenny Ellis, Connor Barley, Harvey Horn, potentially new recruit from Leeds Rhinos, Neil Tshomobay. But there's not much forward experience in that lineup of players, and it is a useful side. There's a smattering of first team pros in there. So then you start looking at some of the other players within the squad who might feature. You know, then you start looking at potentially, I mean, Michael Matthews, he's put on YouTube, he's watching. Big season coming up from Matty Staunton and Sam Luckley, pushing for a starting spot and earning new contracts. You know, could we see a Matty Staunton and Sam Luckley potentially lining up on Sunday to get minutes under the belts? Maybe not as many minutes as we've come to expect during a Super League game, but, you know, you look at the Sheffield Eagles side and you would say that they're going to have to front up a little bit in terms of the forwards, because Willie Peters is going to want to get minutes under the belt for some of these players. He's also got a difficult job in there protecting some of them, hasn't he? And you look at the ones who came back late, Tyrone May, Michael Lewis, you'd probably expect them to be nowhere near this side. And Willie Peters did say the lineup for the Leeds Rhinos game is probably going to be the lineup, or as close to it as you'd expect for when we take on that lot in the Super League season opener. But forward-wise, you know, you could look at your Whitbreads, Tanganoa, Sam Luckley, Matty Staunton, potentially George King, lining up, on Sunday.
Yeah, again, it's just that balancing this around who do you risk in a game like this, and who needs to play, and who you got sort of penciled in for the Leeds Rhinos game, if that's going to be a benchmark for where your starting 13 will be, or 17 will be for the start of the season. So, yeah, a couple of players at the back end of last season, Jesse Sue, for example, came back from sort of injury near the back end of the season. So does he need minutes under the belt? Does Matty Staughton get a shift of 15, 20 minutes? Players like Dean Hadley, they finished the season last season with a few bumps and bruises and knocks. Do they need to sort of get back into it? Do we need to risk them, or do we ask other players to sort of step up? But certainly some of the ones that you've mentioned there in that list, I think will get some minutes, not necessarily big minutes, but I think the likes of the new players coming into the squad, such as potentially Whitbread, for example, along with a Staughton or a Luckley, could bring that sort of experience to the front line and the pack, and just help and support others in there with a bit of Super League guile from them. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. We are speculating at the minute and sort of going around the houses who might and who might not. But the next 24 hours or so, we'll tell once the team sheets put forward. But yeah, I wouldn't expect it to be anything looking like what we would want to see in our strongest 13 for a Super League game.
Yeah, and we've got some youngsters who have been much heralded, given professional contracts back in 2023. And a lot of supporters will be excited to see these out in the first team, red and white of all Kingston Rovers, the likes of Louis Gorman, Leo Tennyson, Lenny Ellis, Harvey Horn. The re-emergence potentially of Zach Fishwick, who albeit burst on the scene unexpectedly, obviously didn't feature in 2023, but he's had a season of training with the first team and in the first team set up. And it'd be interesting to see how he goes this season and how much game time he gets, whether that being the reserves or whether it's out on loan. And of course, Reece Butterworth, who was the League One player of the season, he's chomping at the bit to get another contract. He's got a one-year contract with the club holding the option to extend it for another season. I mean, he's got formidable opposition in terms of Jez Litton and Matty Parcell for that hooker spot. But he can only do what he can do, and what he can do is play the game of his life, get the opportunity when he gets the opportunity, take it. And there's no better time to do that than Sunday against the Sheffield Eagles.
Absolutely. I think, a new player coming into the squad and being given the nod, for example, he's going to want to show Willie Peters what he can do and the coaching staff what he can do, because during the season, he will need to be called on. Litton and Parcell, no doubt, will be the front runners for the number nine shirt, but he will believe that if he gets given a chance through suspension, injury, etc., he will want to stake a claim to that shirt and challenge the other two for that. So he will believe that, I'm sure, 100%. So, yeah, he'll want to get off to a good start. Comes with a good pedigree, as you say, player of the season. And I think fans will be excited to see what that looks like in a whole KR shirt. And look, Parcell, Litton may or may not be around forever. I think we know which... we're not daft enough to think that we're going to have them forever. So that could be a difficult point. If we can get players in with good minutes under the belt and used to the Super League grind, then it all bodes well for that succession planning, as and when players do either move on, choose to retire, or get released.
Yeah. Corey Hall, he's a bit of an interesting one, isn't he? Because he came to the side from Wakefield last season, the swap deal for Will Dagger. During the course of our sort of mini injury crisis, we saw Corey Hall feature quite regularly. Obviously, towards the back end of the season, didn't feature as much, but he was much heralded as being the future of Hull Kingston Rovers. And I think at the time when we did sign him, Willie Peters did put an air of caution on him, saying, look, he's probably not for now. Obviously, injuries dictated that he had to get his opportunity much sooner than Willie Peters may have wanted to. But, and he did okay, didn't he? He did okay. I think he was a bit unfortunate in that he got moved around a few positions and I don't think that did him any favours. But all I'd say is you look at who's in front of him currently in terms of the squad for 2024 and who's our centre options. You wouldn't say he's got no chance of playing, but his chances may be limited again. So another player, though, has got to take his opportunity when it does arise.
Absolutely. And again, came with a good reputation at Wakefield, playing well in a very average team. Started off well in the first few games that we saw him, and then sort of drifted away. And like you say, with the movement around the squad and the in and out and not having that consistency, maybe didn't help him stamp a claim to a shirt. But yeah, one with, again, good potential. One for the future. But it's up to the player to harness that. And he's been given an opportunity, and I'm sure he wants to be on the pitch rather than sat in the stands. So he should, again, be one of those players who are doing everything to say to Willie Peters, look, here I am, this is what I can do. I deserve a shirt. Whether that's this season again, who knows, with injuries, suspensions, etc., and what will happen in the course of the next 9 or 10 months. But he's got to be ready if and when called upon to do his bit to earn that shirt, to keep it, and then ultimately keep somebody else out of the squad.
Yeah, Bazzer85, he's looking forward to seeing AJ Wallace. Of course, he's already played one game in 2024 already. He lined up for our dual reg partners, Featherstone Rovers against Bradford, his former side, who Robin signed him from. Bazza says, I can't wait to see him develop in a full-time environment. I believe he's the next big thing, same as Tyler Dupree, who, of course, could have signed for the Robins last season, so close to him being a Robin. There's a few players, isn't there, who you cast an eye over and they come with a bit of expectation, because when you sign a player, you don't sign them to make up the numbers. So, you know, he is one I'm looking forward to seeing. And I suppose the big thing is for a few of these players, Graham, is not just how they develop their ability, it's how they respond to the full-time environment, the rigours of being a full-time professional, how they adapt to Willie Peters' training methods and the expectations that are placed upon them. So there's a lot of things these players have to adapt to. And that's why the challenge is so exciting, I guess, for them. And that's why we look forward to seeing what they can do as much, because there's no doubt if they get it right, there is a pathway into that first team of you've already alluded to. I suppose a word of warning, the anniversary of Willie Peters' first game in charge wasn't too long ago. Of course, that was a 28-0 defeat at Featherstone. Very disappointing night in the freezing cold at Post Office Road. Look what happened after that. So, yeah, pre-season games are important. Results-wise, not the be-all and end-all.
No, I don't. Yeah, I wouldn't want anybody to get hung up on a result. Whether you win 50-0 or lose 50-0, it's going to have no bearing whatsoever on the season. It's going to matter when it's obviously Super League and 2 points are at stake. So, yeah, this is all about seeing the players. And again, I think it's a bold call from Bazza there around AJ Wallace. And you'd love to see that development take place. And if he can fulfil that potential, and that's the exciting thing, I think, as a fan, is we've not seen him in a red and white shirt for us do that yet. So the expectation, the hope is there that he can. And if he does develop and is guided in the right way and takes on board the right advice and applies himself really well, and we end up with a player that's as highly regarded as Tyler Dupree is, that's going to be fantastic for Hull KR. But some of that is down to the player as well. And as you said there, Chris, around their attitude and their involvement in that first team environment and the rigours of getting bashed about each week in a full-time environment. And yeah, it's all different for those players. It's all new. So how do they adapt? Some will thrive in it. Some will take some time to adjust, and I'm sure some will not adapt to it, and we might see one or two fall by the wayside. But yeah, if AJ turns out to be the player that Tyler Dupree is, then I think we've got to get excited about that. But he's going to have the chance and opportunity to develop first and grow into that, rather than be hit and miss, which could be. We might not see the best of him for another 6-9 months until he settles down and really gets to grip with the environment that he's been put into. So yeah, one to watch definitely. as are some of the other ones as well. So I think all fans, we want to see good players playing for Hull KR, and let's hope that some of these with the potential tag attached to their name fulfil it with us, and we get to see the benefits of it and hopefully reap the rewards from their time and investment.
Time will tell, Graham. Players, new players aren't the only things that we're going to see out on the pitch on Craven Park on Sunday. There's been some new rule changes introduced for Super League, Rugby League. We're going to see, instead of a six again, a penalty will now be awarded if the offence occurs in the opposition 40. It'll be set restarts everywhere. So basically, any infringement in the opposition's 40 metres, instead of getting a six again, the referee will award a penalty. Of course, Graham, that avoids what is a big bear of many supporters, is the defending team holding on for the first tackle, in effect creating one more tackle in the set. It allows them to regroup, get the defensive line back, and it gives almost the defensive team the advantage. They're no longer going to be able to do that. Is that a welcome change for you?
I think so. As a fan, you know, I'm sure all fans out there get frustrated by that. And look, players will play to the rules, and those are the rules created. So you can't blame the players for doing it. It's the rules that dictate how that happens. So I think what that will mean there, John, as you sort of alluded to, the situation trying to reduce out of that is that delaying tactic and getting everybody back and set behind the line and knowing it's just a restart. But with a penalty, you're going to be able to hopefully boot it downfield another 20 metres. You're going to be sat on the line, basically, and attacking the line. So it's definitely an attacking move from the game's perspective in terms of the gamesmanship that we've seen on those set restarts. So, yeah, hopefully it will prove one where the game opens up a bit more and doesn't become that wrestle to keep somebody down an extra few seconds that just allows you and your team to get set and get organised again. It's going to keep people from doing that. And once, like with all the rules, once people get used to it, I'm sure that we'll see it minimised.
Yeah, so the other rule changes, Graham, and it's around the ruck. And I know, I mean, when I stand in the East End, it's the ruck and the speed of the ruck and the interference in the ruck. You know, it's definitely something that gets on people's wicket. And some of the rules changes that they're going to introduce are a player must now make a genuine attempt to play the ball. I mean, that's something that's gone by the wayside for a good few years now. They must regain get onto their feet to play the ball. And also they'll be penalised if they attempt to play the ball, but almost be crafty and place it on the defender who may be laid there. It'll be the player who's in possession of the ball who'll be penalised for that. The second marker at a tackle must now stand immediately behind the first rather than a few steps back, which obviously gives them the advantage to be able to manoeuvre left or right to make the tackle. So they must be pushed up and right behind the first marker. And defenders must now immediately release the ball carrier once the tackle is called. And that's to prevent more people rushing in, slowing down the ability of the attacking player to play the ball. And what they've said is the speed of playing the ball shouldn't be affected by these measures, because what they're saying is if a player actually regains his foot, plays it properly with his foot, then that technique will be about the same speed as what we've become used to. So it shouldn't affect it too much, but it should be cleaner. And ultimately, I suppose with all rules, Graham, the rules are only as good as what they are written on paper. It's the implementation which sometimes causes frustration, causes angst, causes, you know, a whole world of problems. So we'll see. I mean, apparently the trials in pre-season with these new rules and the way they've been implemented by the match officials has been positive. Again, time will tell, won't it? But it's going to be our first chance on Sunday to set our eyes on these changes and see how they are going to affect the game going forward in 2024.
Yeah, I think it's just like you said, a bugbear, I think, is the right word, Chris, around as a fan. Play the ball is shocking in terms of what you compare it as an NRL experience. So, yeah, that definitely needs tidying up. And the fact of the application of those rules by the match officials. You know, they've got tons to look at on those tackles, contacts, play the balls, etc. So, and I know we always have a moan and a groan about the officials and when decisions go against us, but there is so much to view as a match official. I think all you're hoping for as a fan of your club is that there's consistency across, not just across the game itself in the 80 minutes, but across each of the referees and match officials that apply those every week, week in, week out. And where you get those inconsistencies, that's where the fans get annoyed and frustrated with it, because last week it was okay and so-and-so referee was letting that go, and then this week somebody's picking up on it. So I think if the players and the coaching staff have had all the guidance pre-season about what that looks like, I'm sure and I hope that's part of the work that's been done in pre-season in terms of what can and can't be done. And I know from a football perspective, what used to happen is that the professional match officials used to go off and visit clubs and spend some time with them and talk through those implementations in real life and how they would be deemed on match day. So again, I hope that there's that opportunity being taken up as well to seek that support and guidance to know what's acceptable, what's not. But again, ultimately, with rules and with, you know, with the one, for example, where you've got to make a genuine attempt, or you'll be penalised, sorry, if you're placing the ball on the defender. Again, that's open to interpretation about how that's applied and administered. So I'm not saying it's going to clean everything up, but it's a start and hopefully a push forward in terms of cleaning that area of the game up. But as always, we'll see how long it lasts and see what the game looks like and see how and if fans are getting frustrated with any of the inconsistencies that usually come up in rule interpretation. Yeah.
And of course, Graham, it's going to be even more important, especially in try-scoring situations, and the match officials and players are going to be under even greater scrutiny this season, because there's going to be a video referee at every single game. So the the implementation and the officiating is going to be very important, because ultimately there's going to be someone else scrutinising these decisions as well if it's in a try scoring situation. So yeah, we'll see how it all pans out, won't we? I'm sure the East Stand and Rover supporters in general will let the match officials know whether they are right or wrong in their interpretation of the rules. Supporters are correct in their interpretations.
Encourage all supporters to read and understand the rules as well, first and foremost, so that we know what we're moaning at the officials about first.
Yeah, time will tell. Anyway, before we came on this Red Robin podcast weekly, Graham, I set you the task of picking your Super League, Hulkington Rovers all-time Super League 13. I've done the same. And then what we're going to do is we'll share them on our social media channels. If you're watching this on YouTube, comment below. See if you agree with our selections. Put forward your selections. I thought it'd be a lot easier than what it was, Graham. It proved to be quite a difficult task for me.
Yeah, I spent a good couple of hours thinking about this, John. And there were some bits where I slotted a player in straight away to a position. And there were others where I was umming and ahhing. And there were others where I was thinking, we haven't really been blessed in that particular area with top-class players. And I won't say I struggled, but there was sort of slim pickings when I was thinking about all-time Super League greats. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm sure we'll have some similarities, but, yeah, like every fan, I'm sure there'll be some differences of opinion as well, which everybody's entitled to.
Yeah, Graham, I set no criteria on this other than that they had to have represented Hulkington Rovers in Super League, of course. It was very difficult sometimes not to go down the route of your favourite player or a player you like to watch, opposed to sometimes maybe someone who may have technically been better in your opinion, but maybe didn't play that many games or didn't necessarily always endear himself to supporters. So it was a bit of a difficult one, but we'll kick off with our fullback. So Graham, who did you get down at fullback?
So again, this is one area where I had a good hard think to myself, and I came up with a shortlist of three of Briscoe, Quinlan and Coote for mine. I think my favourite one, I think, was Kuti. And I don't know whether I've been, even though he's only with us for a relatively short period of time, just the quality, the experience he brought tipped me in that particular in that particular camp for that position, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, he was definitely part of, I mean, what we've talked at the start of the Robin pod about in terms of raising standards and that greater caliber of player. Of course, the biggest frustration, you know, not the only one, is that we just didn't see him out on the pitch long enough. But when we did see him out there, we did see some class, didn't we?
We did. And I sort of, that was part of my thinking was, I wish we'd had him sort of 3 years earlier than we got him. But that was my, so in some of my players, it was their overall contribution to the game, not just the when they put the shirt on for Hull KR as well.
Yeah, definitely. My choice, Graham, and it's a player who played 100 times for Hulkingston Rovers, made 100 starts, scored 30 tries, played four seasons for Hulkingston Rovers between 2008 and 2011. Sean Briscoe.
Yeah.
I just thought he was a player who, I think he got England honours as well while playing for Hulkingston Rovers, and there's not many players who can say that in the Super League era. Of course, played for that lot as well, but I think he brought a real maturity to the team. He was, I mean, under the high bomb, he was Mr. Dependable. And he played during an era where, you know, he helped us transition as well. So we had the team who got us promoted. We had the teams who kept us in Super League. And then he helped us go to that next level. And, you know, he was my number one. We'll go on to our wingers next, Graham. I'll kick off with, well, my two wingers, Peter Fox and Ryan Hall.
I've gone for Ryan Hall and Peter Fox.
Great double act.
Bizarrely.
Fox and Hall.
Yeah,
Hall.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I went for Feed the Fox and He Will Score. Just a genuine out-and-out speedster and knows exactly where the try line was. And Ryan Hall, enough said, just Ryan Hall.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose with Peter Fox, he's another player who was, I think, gained England honours while playing at Hulkingston Rovers. Again, played during the same era of Sean Briscoe. He was lethal, though, wasn't he, Peter Fox? Yeah. And he was, again, someone who you could depend on. Someone who a player who excelled in his position, but improved during his time with the Robins as well, I think. He got better. And Ryan Hall, I mean, I think expectations of what he could do and what he's gone on to do for Hulkingston Rovers, he's far exceeded expectations, not just in terms of what he's done, in terms of the amount of games he's played, his ability to run out of back play, but just for how long he's played as well, and the fact he's still representing the Robins now and could go on for longer. Who knows? There's no limit on what he can do. But someone as well, Graham, who's a consummate professional, someone you want in your changing room, the head coach wants him right in that changing room so he can point to him and say, hey, lads, look what he's doing. He's doing the marginal gains. He's doing the hard work. He's making the difference. And then look what happens out on the pitch.
Absolutely. Like you say, consummate professional, I think I would absolutely 100% agree with that. And I think we've probably spoken about this on previous podcasts, Jono, where many people would have thought, Ryan Hall's just coming for a bit of an end of career jolly, but absolutely not, still operating as at the highest standard now in everything he does. And probably the way he can operate is a testament because he is that consummate professional. He looks after himself. He knows what his body can and can't do and looks after it so well that he's still playing at the ripe old age of, what, 35, 36 nowadays, and not looking like he's anywhere near finished just yet.
Yeah. I mean, notable mention for Josh Mantellato. I mean, not just his try-scoring exploits, but his kicking exploits as well. Hit me with your centres, Graham.
So I went quite current on this one. Well, very current with SKD and Tom Opacic. So I'm bang up to date on this. I just think SKD is SKD, and I think there's no nothing else needs to be said on that. With Opacic, I think we've got a player there who's come over with a good reputation as a player at the peak of his time, rather than somebody at the very beginning or the very end. So I think he's got an all-round game that is very solid in defence, and I think he's got the flamboyancy that we love our centres to see, with the flicks and steps, etc. And again, he can score as well. So I've sort of kept it quite current with my thinking on centres, Chris.
Yeah, definitely. Nothing wrong with that, Graham. I've looked a little bit further back than you to choose my centre. My first choice centre is Chris Wellham. 191 appearances, 102 tries played between 2006 and 2013. 8 seasons at the Robins. Famous for that handoff, the way he brushed past so many defenders. I mean, a player who grew. You know, you remember how he was quite raw and how he just got better season upon season. And one of the few players, I suppose, who've left the Robins during the Super League era and gone on to have an almost better career. You know, and he's a player who just got on with his work, didn't cause any ruffle, just got on with the job, and it was so dependable. So he was my choice at centre alongside, of course, Sean Kenny-Dowell, captain, fantastic. You know, like you said, what do you need to say about him? We've become so accustomed to him featuring on that left-hand side along with Ryan Hall. And ability-wise, do you know one thing that when we signed him, Graham, and surprised me the most was just how tall he was.
Yeah. And I think as a fan as well, seeing Chris come into the squad as a raw, probably a teenager at the time, you could just tell that he was needing to be developed and physically and to compete with the rigours of the game. But I think we saw that, and as you say, he was very dependable. He knew where the try line was, certainly. And I think we saw the formative years of his career there develop as a Hull KR player. And when he did leave, he did go on and join the Super League club and play still at the highest level, which, you know, is testament to him and what he'd done to end that contract. But I think you're right. He was one who was always there, always 7 and 8 out of 10 every single week. Never let you down with a performance or attitude, etc. Just very, very dependable. Maybe didn't have the flamboyancy that some of the top class centres had, but certainly had the right work ethic, certainly had the right attitude as well.
Yeah,
and a local lad as well. Local
yeah,
lad,
you can yeah. listen to about Chris Wellham's time at Hull Kingston Rovers on the Robin Pod Heritage Cast. Caught it with him, I think about a year ago, and he talked about his time at Hull Kingston Rovers. Great listen. So get on board with that one. Tough ones now, Graham, the halfbacks, 6 and 7. Not an easy one. Who have you gone for first?
Well, this was one of the easiest ones for me to pick, John, the 6 and 7. I went Blake Green, Michael Dobson.
For me, Dobson is almost automatic choice. Interesting you've gone with Green. I mean, Dobson, let's talk about him. 153 appearances for the Robins, played for 6 seasons. Just controlled the game, had a bit of everything within his game. You know, probably one of the most all-round players I've seen at Craven Park in his ability to do, you know, a bit of everything, but not just a bit of it to a decent level, to such a high standard. The influence he had on the team, the influence on games, the amount of games that he could win single-handedly, whether it was with ball in hand, whether it was putting the ball on his boot, he just seemed to have a bit of magic that just set him above everybody else on the pitch. Another one who's featured on the Robin Pod Heritage Cast and talks so fondly about his time at Hull Kingston Rovers. And for me, he was an automatic choice.
Yeah, I completely agree. And the reason I went with Green was they complemented each other so well, and it was almost like a double act, rather than trying to sort of fit them in. And I just thought at the time they complemented each other so well, and Green allowed Dobbo to do what exactly what you just said there in the controlling of the games. And I think we looked a real attacking threat when they were playing in that sort of Justin Morgan era, 11-12-ish. So, yeah, that was my double act. Who did you go for at six?
Yes. I've kept it current, Graham. And for me, choosing a player to partner with Dobson was difficult because it's been such a problematic position for the Robins, probably during the Super League era, in that you're not picking from a long list of players who have played that position and had a really big impact. I've gone for Mikey Lewis.
Okay.
Yeah, I just think the way he's come to the fore in 2023, some of the rawness, some of the natural ability, I just think he's set himself above. But you're right, between him and Blake Green's are very difficult. And, you know, they're in different stages of their careers. You only have to look at what Blake Green went and did post-Rovers as well. But, yeah, I've gone for Mikey Lewis to partner Michael Dobson. Let's move on to the props, Graham.
Yeah, this was an area where I sort of felt we didn't have too many top quality ones to choose from. So I've gone on a little bit of left field in this one. First one, Mikali Ezu. And that was from not going to be the most skillful player in the world, not going to be the quickest player in the world, but effort, the ability to get knocked down, get up and go again, just epitomised everything about what we want our rugby players in Hull Care Shirt to do.
Yeah, big unit, big impact.
Yeah. Huge cast as well.
Yeah, big human. So you can see where you've gone for him. What about your other prop, Graham?
Again, this is more, I guess, a bit of sentiment in this, in actually being able to see a player of this stature playing a Hull Care Shirt. So this was Mickey Vella.
Yeah, of course, a player who just led the side so admirably as well, didn't he? But
yeah.
Complete problem, you know, for me, he was, I've got him down on my props as well, Mickey Vella. Just wholehearted performances, running on one leg half the time. You know, you never got anything less than 110% from him. Yeah. And that's probably doing him a disservice because he had, skill-wise, he had a little bit of skill in him as well, which he used to great effect. But along with Michael Dobson, he was somebody who, for me, led the side, obviously had such influence in the changing room, but he'd be someone the head coach would pinpoint and point to and say, you know, follow his lead. And players followed him. The amount of players who would have run through a brick wall as him as captain based on what Mickey Vella was doing. So, yeah, he was my choice. My other one, keeping it current, and it's probably a little bit like what you said, Graham, it's a position we've not particularly been blessed in, but in terms of consistency, George King.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just the consistency and the dependability that he's brought to the side. I don't think there's been so many like him in the red and white of Hull Kingston Rovers in Super League. Let's move to Hooker.
Yeah, this is one where I think we've been blessed with several choices, and I think, you know, listeners, viewers will each have their opinion on this. And so I had a shortlist of three: Josh Hodgson, Ben Fisher, and Sean Lunt to choose from. And again, there's an argument and a case for all three in terms of their qualities, but I've just gone for Lunty for the reason of him being a catalyst of when we were down and out and got relegated, him being the re-sign or him putting pen to paper to re-sign for us in the Championship was the catalyst for a lot of good things to happen following that exercise. So I went on that basis with a bit of sentiment and went for Lunty, but I could have gone with either of the other two quite easily.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, a lot of supporters who are listening and watching this might be chucking Matty Parcell into the mix as well. He's had a fantastic time in Hull KR, and hopefully, you know, he's going to have a fantastic 2024. I've gone with one of your three, Josh Hodgson, gone on to having a fantastic NRL career and international career, but dependability, aggressiveness. That's what I loved about him as well, his aggressiveness and his ability to get on the front foot. Very similar to Sean Lunt and how he made the team go forward. The team went with him. Josh Hodgson, for me, was absolutely fantastic for Hull Kingston Rovers in Super League. A tough choice now, Graham, second row.
No, dead easy.
This was easy for you.
This was absolute shoo-ins for me. No questions. Clint Newton, Ben Galea. And if you say anything else, you're wrong.
I won't say Kane Lynette then.
No, again, I did have Lynette as a very, very close to that. But again, just that era when it was Dobson, Green, Galea, Clint Newton, everything just clicked together. And I thought them two as a pairing in the back row were outstanding together. And it's hard to sort of separate them and put anybody else in there. But yeah, Kane Lynette is a worthy second row in our Super League era.
Yeah, I have gone for Clint Newton. I mean, another player was featured on the Robin Pod Heritage Cast. Talks so fondly about his time at OKR. And you're right. I mean, them two were so dependable, so consistent, just so good. And if you think, Graham, as well, we hadn't been accustomed necessarily at that time to players of that ilk, but coming in and probably being in the best time of their career and just doing so well.
Absolutely. And I think with, you know, sort of same comments around Dobson, with Mickey Vella, that calibre of player, Ben Galea at that time as well, what he'd done over in Australia. You're right, they came over at exactly the right time for us, not on that downward spiral. They were just at the peak of the powers. And I just think for the pair of them, it was very hard for me to separate and not put one in without the other one.
Yeah. I've just gone slightly. Kane Lynette, I just, the reasons for Kane Lynette are probably, exactly the same reasons as what you'd give for Newton and Glee. Different era, different time. So I've gone Lynette. I mean, noticeable mentions to Jason Neverton, Bobby Blair, who performed. Yeah. So yeah. Well in that second row. Yeah. And then number 13, loose forward, Graham.
Do you want to go first on this one?
Yeah, I've kept it current and I think he's a real Rolls-Royce of a player. And I think someone who's come on leaps and bounds at Hull Kingston Rovers and just through his sheer quality, I'm going Elliot Minchella.
I've got exactly the same, Jono. And I'm just looking at my team sheet now. I'd love to see our back row of Clint Newton, Ben Galea and Minchella playing together. That would be formidable, I think.
Yeah. And I think with Minchella, he is the modern-day loose forward as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I think he's maybe the challenge to him going into 2024 is getting him maybe on the pitch for a little bit longer. But obviously, he's going to thrive under that captaincy run. And no doubt, if Willie Peters has made him captain, you would expect him to have longer minutes out on the pitch now. So he's a fantastic player. But yeah, so to recap, Graham, I've gone Briscoe, Fox, Wellham, Sean Kennedy-Dowell, Ryan Hall, Michael Dobson, Mikey Lewis, Mickey Vella, Josh Hodgson, George King, Clint Newton, Kane Lynette, Elliot Minchella, and you've gone Lachlan Coote, Peter Fox, Tom Opacic, Sean Kennedy-Dowell, Ryan Hall, Blake Green, Michael Dobson, Mikhaili Azu, Sean Lunt, Mickey Vella, Clint Newton, Ben Galea and Elliot Minchella. We're going to share that on social media. Please let us know what you think. Put your comments in the boxes below. Graham, it's been fantastic. We're going to pose a few more of these questions, I think, throughout the season, get some of the other podcast regulars on board to give me their thoughts. But it's a wrap, and it's going to be good to be back at Craven Park on Sunday. We're going to finish with one last question for you, John. Graham, and it's from John. Is it John says, what does Graham love most, watching Hull KR or cycling in Spain?
Yeah, John's pulling your leg. I go riding with John. In answer to that question, John, I would say watching Hull KR. As much as I love my cycling, I love watching Hull KR even more.
110%. This has been the Robin Pod Weekly. episode 2, powered by Budget Tyres Auto Centre, the only car specialist which is supported by the players, club officials and supporters of Hulkington Rovers. Make sure you check them out on Leeds Road. But for now, live, love, laugh and be happy.